Hey, all right, guys, welcome to another episode of The Target Table. And today we have Emma joining us on the couch, well as Luke.
Hello. I feel like I missed the all black memo today. Sorry, no one told me.
Well, you got black shoes, black socks, and a black top.
And a black soul.
Oh, he kind of does.
I'm looking a bit emo today, aren't I?
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe not emo.
The
maybe
pearls
like,
brightened it up a bit, I think.
Not quite emo. I would probably say like maybe more scene.
Yes. Back to my scene kid
scene
roots.
Kid. Yeah, more scene kid than emo. Yeah.
We're talking about that like 15-year cycle, right? 15 years ago, I was full scene kid.
Yeah.
I had the straightened fringe down to here and like the yellow skinny jeans from Supre and
glorious.
JJ's.
Yeah, man. I had red Supre. Had red skinny jeans from Supre.
Yeah.
I had a comb over like down to here.
Ooh, you were a Supre kid too.
Yeah, I was a Supre kid.
Wow.
Yeah. You
didn't,
won't find
you
photos,
didn't strike
man.
Me as
I
a Supre kid.
Rub the internet. You will never find that shit. It's gone. I wish I'd still had.
I'm like, I will repost those photos to laugh at myself. I'm that person that's like, clear no history.
Yeah.
Like, all on the table. This is where I was.
It was all on my MySpace, but like my MySpace got hacked and deleted, so I can't find it.
Who was your top friend?
Fuck, I can't even remember, man. That's so long ago. Friends from high school, probably. But I remember the song that was on my MySpace.
What was it?
Papa Roach.
Sick.
Tear My Heart Open. Tear My Heart Open, is it?
Last Resort.
Cut My Life Into Pieces. This Is My Last Resort.
Yeah, yeah.
Suffocation. No.
Yeah. If it gets my heart bleeding. No. It's a Tear My Heart Open.
Okay.
What's that one? It's like, I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut.
I think I only know one Papa
my
Roach.
Same. I didn't know.
Dude, it was boring.
They're a one hit wonder in my eyes.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's a hit. Hit is correct, but.
Yeah, like, look it up. Just
tear my heart open.
Look up Dane's MySpace page.
This is where it all began. Scars.
Scars.
Papa Roach scars. The most depressing shit. And this was on my MySpace. And it was just like videos of me doing BMX.
That's so early 2000s.
Sick. That was your first brand.
That was my
that,
first
that was
brand,
your first
dude.
Your brand.
This
right?
emo kid in high school
BMX
that liked Papa Roach. Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I love it.
But back then we had Bebo, we had MySpace, and Facebook wasn't really a thing.
I thought you said Bieber for a second. I was like, are you like listening to Papa Roach and Justin Bieber? Like,
no.
Papa Bieber.
Papa Bieber. Have you seen the Slipknot Bieber mashup?
No.
Oh, it's so good. They've taken Psychosocial but put the vocals of Baby over the top and it fits flawlessly.
Dude, I love it when people pull that shit off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so, so funny. You'll love it.
Well, that brings us to maybe a little bit of an intro to today's episode. What we wanted to unpack and dive into today was a little bit about, I guess, how would you guys summarize like personal branding within the hemisphere of like media and entertainment and just using them as examples of like how we can grow our own personal brands?
Yeah, I think what I find interesting about it is people don't realize that brands are everywhere. You see a person and you're like, oh, that's a personality. But I think a personality translates to a brand. So we wanted to just break apart some of the world's most famous personalities and how some of that is a conscious choice to brand themselves for a specific audience and why that works.
Yeah. And I would say probably one of the people that are absolutely, well, the person that's breaking the internet at the moment is Taylor Swift. And I know both of you are huge fans.
Absolutely.
I admire Taylor. I'm not an avid listener as much as you both are. And I don't try to buy tickets, but like, man, massive respect for what she's done. But
good for you that you didn't try to buy tickets. So it's a painful experience.
Well, I'm like,
regret.
I don't want to, you know, what we had.
Regret and remorse.
Guys, like for those of you listening, it was an ordeal here at Rival when Tay-Tay was coming to Australia. Yeah. I remember walking around the office, 25 of us. Everyone had three monitors and their phone and their tablet open, smashing refresh all day to hopefully get a ticket. And
like,
one
can you
person,
get on this client call? Everyone's like, nope, sorry.
Yeah.
Not today, I can't.
Not working today.
Yeah, we were super unproductive that day. But, you know, there was really no fruit at the end of it because no one got tickets and except one person who had a friend that got two tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what, there was 800,000 people trying to get tickets for...
I researched this. It was more. There was more than 4 million people in Australia trying to get tickets.
No.
That is
it
wild.
It felt like it.
Yeah.
That's like
that's
a quarter of the country.
Yeah. Wait, what's the Australian population? 26 million?
25 million, I think.
Was that a thing that we're supposed to know? That feels like a fact that should be common knowledge.
It's always changing, man. So how are we meant to know?
25 million, I'm right.
Yeah. Okay. 20, hold on. When I last looked it up, it was
18. Right. Mic drop. Yeah, so what? She had a fifth of the population, roughly, trying to buy tickets to her show. Plus, you would have had people from overseas as well because she's not going to New Zealand. So there was a bunch of New Zealand
That's ridiculous,
people.
Man. So 20...
Huge.
20, like what is that? 20% of our population trying to buy tickets.
Yep. and many, 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 many people failing at that because she is not performing to 20% of the population. She's doing four nights in Sydney and I want to say three nights in Melbourne, maybe four nights in Melbourne.
Right.
But 80,000 cap stadium.
Would you say that from your experience, she's kind of tapping into what Elvis and Michael Jackson were tapping into? Like there's ooh, fame and then there's like this sensationalism.
Yeah, she's definitely like the timeless. She's a household name forever now. Like surely there's no one on the planet who's never heard of Taylor Swift at this point.
Yeah. Okay.
That there would be an interesting poll.
Yeah, yeah.
A tribe in the Amazon.
Drop a comment if you've never heard of Taylor Swift.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, reverse that. Drop a comment if you've heard of Taylor Swift. Mm. We're just going to boost the engagement on this one, I reckon.
So she's doing four shows in Sydney and three in Melbourne.
Wow.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot. And this is not a standard venue in Australia. This is like an arena, huge, right?
So we were...
Or stadium, sorry. She plays at stadiums.
MGC.
Yeah. So I guess dialing that back to how she built that phenomenon, right? We were chatting about it throughout the week in the office. And something that we sort of touched on is this interesting aspect of, to me, she is the person I can think of that has rebranded the most. And I think it's a perfect example of one brand not having that longevity of forever. You know, people get scared to rebrand. They go, oh, but people know my existing brand. You know, people have seen my logo. People know what I'm like. If I change that, I'm going to lose everyone. And right. I think she is the example of the exact opposite. Being
so
successful.
When you say rebranded, like what do you mean? Because like I understand that she's kind of evolved her music. She used to have curly hair, now she has straight hair. Her music used to be
that's it. That's what a rebrand
country
is.
Now. It's pop.
Change your hair, you're done.
Yeah. Okay. So like let's unpack that. Like what like at what point do you consider okay, she's done a rebrand? Because like artists are always changing themselves from what I can tell. Like the ones that last. Mm-hmm. Like even like The Weeknd constantly just evolving themselves, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But how do you define what that is?
I think for me, I see that as, well, I would say her overarching brand that I would say she's had the entire time is authenticity. Every era of Taylor Swift has very much seemed true to who she is at that time.
Right.
And I think in and amongst that, part of that authenticity comes with the acknowledgement that you grow as a person, you grow in your life. And throughout each phase of her life, she's branded to match what she's singing about, what she's going through, who she is as a person.
Right. What are some examples of that? Like what was her first album true to today?
Her first album is, I want to say 2006. It was self-titled and she was this small town girl. She grew up on a Christmas tree farm in Pennsylvania. And
that's so romantic. I didn't know it was a Christmas tree. I didn't know
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then she has this very wholesome Christmas song called Christmas Tree Farm about it. It's very nice.
Aww.
Yeah, very sweet.
This hit me in the heart, man.
The feels.
Dane's going to be a Swiftie by the end of this episode.
Like, I just, she just has like points, man. I'm like, what a sweetie pie.
But so if you, and you know, that sounds sweet now, right? Because we're talking about 2006 when she was breaking out as an artist. But if you flip that, now that she's the most famous person in the world, essentially, imagine she's now singing about living in a small town, chasing a guy. You'd be like, I don't believe this.
Yeah.
You know, you live in a mansion.
Doesn't fit the archetype she is now.
Exactly.
Mm. So when an artist is maybe unknown, you're kind of like, you have to play that game.
Yeah.
Would you say?
I think she played the game of being true to herself. She was writing music that reflected what she was going through in her life at the time. It was this like small town young girl, you know, exploring romance for the first time. And I've got a crush on this boy from high school. And it was this relatable content for people that saw themselves as the small town, you know, girl next door vibe.
Right.
And I think so much of that brand at the time came around community and people feeling like they belong in that scene. Something that I think in hindsight is absolutely genius is, you know, so much of branding is about owning something in people's minds. And she, from the get-go, had this storyline of 13 was her lucky number. And in all of her music videos and at all of her shows, she wrote the number 13 on her hand. Hmm. And something as simple as that made fans go, well, I can show my support to Taylor Swift by also writing a 13 on my hand. And now I'm part of this community. And now every time they see the number 13, they're like, Taylor Swift. So right then and there, it was like, you know, it kind of taps into that dreamer feel of like, you know, positive manifestation. I've got my lucky number on my hand. I'm positive about what's going to happen in my day.
Yeah.
And being authentic, like you said, and putting that out there gives people the chance to engage with it and show their support. 100%. And so you're like building the opportunity for people to connect with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
And it's maybe similar to like what you see happen like with Prince. He had the Purple Army. Like people just kind of rally around the artist. Yep. And would you say Taylor is, in intentionally creating Easter eggs in her career? Like how much do you think of her branding is like luck? She's just got the gift of the gab versus like she's engineered this thing.
She's
very
engineered
meticulously.
So much of it. I think, look, it's authentic in that, you know, she's an incredible lyricist. You listen to her songs, so I'm like, this feels very real.
Yeah, the storytelling is amazing.
Yeah. Incredible storyteller, but there's so many little hidden Easter eggs, which I think just helps people dive further and further in. Something I thought was really interesting is, you know, I think in personal brands, in big brands as well, I think there's either the people that latch on originally, the leaders that go, I wanted to be the person to discover a brand.
Right.
The innovators branding language.
There you go. Love it. This is why you're the copywriter.
and the early adopters.
Yeah. And then you've got the followers, right? Who see everyone else loving it and they go, oh, I have to jump on this train.
Yeah.
I think the Easter eggs are appealing to the early adopters, the innovators who are wanting to go deeper and deeper, and that's like their thing, right? They're like, but I know about this. I found this Easter egg. Mm. And I think she did such a great job of building that to the point where so many people in that community loved her,
right,
that it was so loud that everyone else couldn't ignore it anymore. So the followers jumped on.
You've just brought something to the front of my mind. Cabe, can you go to Google and type in Simon Sinek, the law of definitive innovation? I think I've got that correct. There's this diagram, you know, for those that don't know who, just go to images and see if there's a graphic of it on there. Yeah, just click on the first one. I don't know if you can pull it up big screen, that graphic that you've just got there.
We're testing my eyesight here.
Yeah.
I feel like the client that's like, make the logo bigger.
Yeah, let me put my glasses on.
I had it just 10 minutes ago. I was like, are you squinting? Can I make it bigger? They're like, yeah.
But yeah, if you look at this, right, like so Simon Sinek talks about the marketplace in their stages, right? So would you say as a personal brand, and anyone can go on YouTube and look this up, but there's this graph he has where he's like, okay, whatever the brand is, individual or otherwise, you've got the early innovators, which are like, I want to be the guy that discovered the brand.
Yep.
Or the music, or like, no one's heard of this. I just found this latest, coolest band. Yep. I'm going to rep it, buy their merch, go to their shows. Nobody knows about it. That feeling of like, I'm first is the innovators. Then you have the early adopters, which is like people that see the innovator. Like, I would say you're an innovator. You're always like on the cutting edge of fashion and music. And then
thank you.
The crowd around you are like, oh, if Luke's into it, I'm into it. That's the early adopter. Mm-hmm. Then they jump a chasm and they start to hit the early majority. So that's where most of the market that are like savvy with it start jumping on. So where would you say Taylor is? Because then you got the late majority and the laggards, which is like grandma and grandpa. They jump on social media 8 years into like, Facebook's great. And it's like, that platform died 3 years ago. But
yeah,
where would you say she is?
I would say she's gone this whole journey, right? If we're talking back to 2006 first album, she's, you know, it's innovators, it's the early adopters. She was very much part of that smaller community where people who liked her.
That's her first album, like at the beginning.
At the beginning, right. Yeah. And then, you know, she moves through. Second album was similar cycle to the first. It's still the sort of small town girl, you know, girl next door, first romance sort of vibe. I think the biggest change, the first sort of rebrand per se was for her album Red, which was 2012. I believe it was when she was living in Nashville and moved from Nashville to LA. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, well now you're big time, right? You're living in Los Angeles. You're working with some of the biggest writers in the world. You have to grow with your audience and still be authentic at that point. These people are now, the people that started listening to you when they were 15 are now 21.
Right.
They're not in high school anymore. They're reaching that part of their life where they're, you know.
So her audience are like growing with her.
Yeah.
They're going on the hero's journey together with Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah. So she's growing up. They're growing up. And she's still sticking true to herself. At this point, it's like, okay, well, now I'm going to write a record that sounds a bit more big time, right? I'm in LA. I'm working with all these big writers.
Right.
It would be inauthentic to have this record that sounds like it's just come out of a small town.
Yeah.
So I would say that's where you're starting to hit that early majority.
Okay.
And then from there, the biggest peak was 1989, which is when I jumped on the Taylor Swift bandwagon.
Yeah, that's when I actually started listening, which is Shake and...
Shake It Off.
Shake It Off. Yeah. And sorry, if I'm getting... Sorry, Tay fans. So Shake It Off. And then the other one, which was...
MySpace?
Yeah, like it just felt like she started to have an opinion on global issues.
I would say that probably came a little bit later. I would say that was probably Reputation following album.
Right. So she's progressively... being like owning her her stage of her career as she goes.
Her stage of her career and growing with that fan base as well. The people who were those early adopters.
Right.
You know, if she's just constantly staying as the same thing, they're going to try find the next new thing.
Yeah.
But if they're, you know, every cycle that comes along, they're like, oh, I relate to this too. Oh my God, you know, this feels like me. They're like, she understands me. She gets me. So I think 1989 was when they were all turning 21, which in America is obviously the legal drinking age. People are started going out and it's like, have some club bangers.
Yeah.
Have a pop hit that you and your friends can sing.
I think that she talks a lot about her life experiences and those evolve with her as she's growing. She's like maturing as a person and getting older, turning into an adult. And so I think that that authentic base that you spoke to, the storytelling and the experiences are something unique to her. But it's how she styles and produces the music and then that flows through to the image, the costuming, the presentation that starts to really craft how her brand is perceived and have that those jumps.
So she's curating her visual aesthetic, her cinema photography.
Cinematography?
Cinematography. Sorry, Cabe. She's seemingly just... Yeah, not sticking to what works. She's like, what's the next era of my career and just moving into it, which is an interesting point because oftentimes we talk to people who have a personal brand. They're like, this worked, this got me here. And then they're just stuck and they're fearful that if they make a change, they're going to turn off their audience.
Yep.
So what would you say if someone's like, ah, like I'm on the precipice of like kind of feeling like I need to, but I'm fearful I'm going to lose the people that are followed me up to this point, because I've experienced that a little bit as well. But like, what's your take on like people that are trying to do that in the market?
For me, it's the opposite. If you feel like you're at that precipice of needing to change, your audience probably feel the same.
Right.
They also get sick of things, right? If someone's been interacting with a brand for 10, 20 years, there might become a time where they're like, yeah, this is feeling a bit outdated now. Right. This is done. Mm. You know, they've grown up, they've got different interests. So how do you pivot with that to keep that?
Or they kind of like seen it all. Cause like when
I be repetitive.
Cause remember when I started posting on social media, I was teaching content about how to make content about making content. I was like, I'm a genius. Like who on Instagram?
It's very meta.
I was like super meta. Like who on Instagram doesn't want to know about how to grow Instagram, right? I was like, I got this. But after a while, it's like I taught everything. And then I was kind of like, I just keep teaching it. It's monetized. It's doing great. Mm-hmm. But then that's when I was like, you know what? I want to go into the world of branding. And I pivoted my content and I did see a drop off, but then it picked up again and grew even faster.
Yeah.
So like I did see that initial loss and that fear hits you like, oh, this isn't working. But sometimes, but just not rebranding, but just taking a step to the left or a step to the right or moving beyond your parameters of what you do, I think really opens the world of inviting a new audience in. But I think a percentage of your old audience will always come with you. And I'm sure there's Taylor Swift fans that were like, ah, she's changed. I like your old music. There's probably
people coming along the way. Yeah,
I'm starting to do that now, actually.
You're just salty that you didn't get tickets.
Yeah. You're like, that's it. The cry party. And I was like, I'm done with this.
You're like, why is it 3 a.m. and I'm at a club listening to Taylor Swift?
You're like, I need to make some changes in my life.
Emma took a day off work to recover from this Taylor Swift cry party for people who missed out on tickets.
Sure, that's where I got COVID.
I was going to say, and you got COVID from it.
What's a cry party? I don't understand what's
going on. So for the people that missed out on Taylor Swift tickets, there popped up an event in Paddington to be like, come and cry together. We'll play Tay Tay music and we'll just like commiserate. And it was a lot of fun. It was not only me, it was Patricia. And yes, I'm dubbing you in.
Wait, were you guys actually crying till 3 a.m.?
We weren't actually.
I know, it was just people sitting on the floor crying and just.
I get it. Like, you can act through pain. Like, it's cool.
I didn't actually cry, but I won't speak for everyone present.
Okay.
Something about the Taylor Swift, I guess, community. They're quite strong together.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So like, passionate.
When no one could get the tickets, I remember seeing all these posts about the movie.
The
concert that was in, and they're like, we're not gonna sit down, we're gonna dance and sing. And I'm like,
They're like, but that's what participate.
That comes back to the brand, right? We're talking about the 13 on her hand for this positive manifestation and stuff. Like, these fans are conditioned to think positively, which is it's great, right?
I love that.
At what point does this become a cult? That's my question.
It already is.
It is. Past.
All right, so talking about this cult, so all right, and I'm saying this with love. You know, like, there's a term that's been thrown around at the moment called Swiftflation, and it's a thing.
Yeah, it is.
So I'd love Emma to unpack this, because we were talking about this the other day, and this is kind of scary, but like, what the hell is Swiftflation? Is it real?
It is 100% real.
So, okay. And
Google tells us it's
what
real.
What was that?
Yeah. And therefore, it's real.
It's been coined.
So the way I understand it was when Taylor Swift goes to town, there's inflation.
Yeah, that's effectively it.
Okay.
Yeah. So she's so big that the local concerts in Sydney are an example of that, that when she comes to town, that hotel rooms go up. Airfares go up, food goes up, everything gets pushed up, and they're calling it Swiftflation.
That's crazy, man. So like, yeah, like it, like similar to when Formula One went to Vegas. I heard this wild story. I don't know if this is a weird segue, but this is just
interesting. This the story I told you.
I think you told me
the,
this.
The lights.
So, yeah. Do you want to say, dude? It's crazy because what we were talking about, and you were telling me this, was okay, F1 was in Vegas for the first time.
Yeah.
And for those of you that know what Vegas is, it's this giant strip. It's flat. And
does anyone not know what Vegas is?
I don't think anyone knows.
I like the explanation.
That's a global brand at this point.
That's irrelevant. That's irrelevant. That's a global brand. But,
by the way, Vegas has a brand, is a brand. Continue.
Good point, yeah.
It's a very immersive brand. Have you guys been there?
A very deliberate brand, too.
Have you been there?
I have not.
It's wild. It's the most bizarre place I've ever been.
All I've had is a friend walk through the main strip and just like show me around. But so what happened was Formula One went to Vegas. They put up the lights, the track and everything else. But then all of these high rises that could see the track.
Mm-hmm. All the hotel rooms.
All the hotels were booking out.
Yeah.
And they had, you know, prime real estate views of the whole race.
Yeah.
And F1 went around to all of the hotels supposedly and said to them, if you don't pay us $1,000 per room per night for the racetrack, we'll make our floodlights face the balcony.
Yep.
Which I don't know if that's legal, but apparently this happened.
Is it illegal? Like, I guess what laws are you breaking, right?
I guess it's their show.
It was people that missed out on tickets and they were like, here's a way of getting myself a view of the track. But
yeah, and I heard tickets were going for, you know, up to $40,000.
People pay a ridiculous amount. Some of the resale Taylor Swift tickets out there. Actually, Tixell is getting really good at this now. There's like websites that you can rebuy tickets through that cap prices so that people can't just go, pay me $5,000 for my Taylor Swift ticket. Talking about that Swiftflation and how much it affects around the shows, something I thought was really, really interesting. And two examples of this. We were chatting earlier in the week about Paramore, who, if you don't know Paramore, one of the biggest emo bands of all time, an incredible band. Last time I saw them in Sydney, they performed to about 10,000 people. And this time they sold out their biggest headline show of all time, which I want to say was 25,000 people. And I think so much of that came down to the fact that tickets came on sale the week after Taylor Swift did. And everyone went, tickets to these shows sell out. I want this show experience that everyone's talking about. I'll go to Paramore.
Right.
They opened for Taylor Swift on a couple of shows in the US as well. And I think that.
So she's rising the tide for all.
Everyone else. Actually, tonight I'm going to see Gracie Abrams, which is JJ Abrams' daughter.
Whoa.
She's a musician as well.
Cool.
And she opened for Taylor Swift recently on the Eras tour in the States.
Yeah.
And so my partner started listening to her when, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago. And back then she was a very small artist. You know, she had the name of it's JJ Abrams' daughter, but as far as her own music goes, I would say if she came here, she would have performed to 500 people at the time.
Yeah.
When we bought the tickets to this show, it was at the Enmore Theatre, which is 2,200 cap. Since then it's been upgraded to 2 nights at the Horden, which is, I want to say, a 6,000 cap venue. So she went from 2,200 people to 12,000 people in Sydney, and it's her first ever Sydney show.
Okay. All right. So then
which comes down to Taylor Swift.
Like, if we come back to this diagram here, would you say like this also applies to the industry of live events? It's almost like Taylor Swift has reignited the live event space.
Yeah.
Because if you think about during COVID, for 2 years, you couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't see anyone. You couldn't see anything.
Right.
Then there was a bit of a drip crawl back. Yep. Now she's touring and she's selling out everything she hits, and that's now got musicians thinking, oh man, maybe I should get back in the scene. Like, what do you think's happening psychologically to the music space and to people that love attending live events?
I think it's partly the FOMO thing, in that so many people talking about Taylor Swift that everyone's like, oh damn, if I'm not there, that's an experience I'm missing out on that everyone's going to talk about, which then domino effects to the live events everywhere else, right? People go, okay, that's how I would feel about missing a Taylor Swift show. Maybe I'd feel the same about missing this Gracie Abrams show. Like, I need to, to do that as well. But I think nostalgia post-COVID is a big thing. People spent 3 or 4 years locked up in their house doing nothing. and then just crave that feeling of let's go back to how we were before.
Yeah.
Like my old band did a reunion mostly because of that, right? We had traction pre-COVID. We split up as a band. COVID happened. Everyone went, we want things to be the way they were before. So we went, okay, well, let's come back with that band and pretend it's 2010 again. I think there's so many cases in the world of, yeah, definitely reigniting things that were big 10, 15 years ago just for that feeling that people are missing.
I think FOMO has gotten a lot stronger as well since COVID because there was 2 solid years of everyone missing out.
Yeah.
So the mentality, I guess, has changed a lot more to just do rather than waiting for something to happen. Just do it while you can.
Right.
What impact would you guys say social media has had on that? Because, like, did FOMO exist in the 60s when people didn't have social media?
Yes, it did.
I think so. It was just called jealousy.
Yes, it did, because you heard the gossip. It was more like the round the water cooler. Oh, did you go to Grace's dinner party? Yeah. It's like, no, did you hear what happened? Like, that.
So it's probably just universal. A much smaller scale, though.
I
would just say it like as an enigma, it operates differently, right? So, like, if you think about the sheer velocity and speed of social media, right? Like if you say, okay, like we were talking about how she intentionally markets, right? Talking about Taylor Swift, she will pop up at a wedding or someone's birthday party.
Yep.
And that's like, you know, you could say a part of her loves the fans and that's cool. But another part of her is like, oh, this is building me as an archetype. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm the kind of person who shows up at a wedding as a gift or shows up at someone's birthday party just to delight them, you're kind of branding yourself as a type of person, right?
Yeah.
And I would say like tactically and marketing wise, she's doing that. But when she does these things, within a day, the whole world knows, oh, Taylor Swift sang at this wedding.
Yeah.
Like the sheer velocity and speed of like information getting out to the world is like immediate. Mm. But if you go back to the 60s, it would have been a publisher, a radio station or maybe a newspaper.
Yeah.
Like I can imagine with Elvis, Elvis became like this sensational thing where everyone had to get tickets when he would go to a town and there would be disputes over the church of whether he should be allowed in that. Like it was crazy. Like
he get arrested on stage for thrusting.
Yeah.
Shaking his hips.
It was the devil's dance, right?
Yeah. The devil's music. Right.
Yeah.
But I think, FOMO's always been there, but I think it's just the speed of the internet. Mm. And I think it's really...
The circle's bigger. It's gone from your immediate people to like...
Anyone. Even,
to community, to like kind of country, to like world, effectively.
I saw a TikTok of a guy. I don't know if you can find this, but there's a TikTok of a... Is that the birthday party she went to?
This is just a picture she rocked up to a super fan's house uninvited.
Imagine Taylor Swift just shows up at your door. You're like... Hello?
Yeah. Imagine if you were dressed inappropriately and you're just like, right? Like, I'm so embarrassed.
You're
like,
just if you're somebody that didn't answer the door, you're just like, oh, it's probably just door
spam. Go away.
You're like coming down the hallway,
set
like
the dogs on them.
You're like listening to music that's not hers and you're like, I'm so embarrassed.
I reckon people might even pass out, you know, if you open the door and you're like, oh my God, it's Taylor Swift.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Would you recognize her? I don't know. A lot of people I see online and then they turn up and I'm like, you don't look like that. So
I feel like Taylor Swift is very
You'd recognize, but there'd be like a lag.
Yeah,
a
you'd be like, I think no.
I know this person.
Impersonator.
You have that moment where you're like, hi, how are you? What could I? And then like 5 seconds later, you're like, hang on a second, that's Taylor Swift. This is actually Taylor Swift.
That happened to me.
Adele audition video.
I feel like people that famous have an energy about them though. I don't know. Who's the most famous person you've ever met?
The most famous person I've ever like talked in a conversation and hung out with is Andrew Schultz.
Okay.
And I'm a fan of his comedy. I love stand-up comedy. I love his performances. And I remember, because I know Mark Cagnon and his team and, you know, myself and Mark have talked a bunch of times. Andrew was coming to Australia and he's like, come and meet me in the green room. And I was like, cool, dope. I'm going to meet Andrew. Went into the green room and it was just a weird thing where it's like you've followed this person for years and now they're in the flesh and your brain just doesn't know how to process it. It's like, I know so much about you, but we've never interacted. So
it's
your brain,
right? It's not a two-way street. You're like, I'm a stranger to you.
There's so much admiration on my side of the fence for you.
You
but
know
then,
so much about me.
But Andrew's just like, hey, what's up, dude? You know,
did
like,
you feel like, even though he was casual with you in that sense, do you feel like there's this air of like, this person's a celebrity? Because I feel like if Taylor Swift rocked up at your door, you'd be like, I sense the energy of... Someone with influence, right?
I would say, you know, like, I don't know, Taylor Swift, I feel like she's on a whole nother level of fame, right? She's like, you know, Michael Jackson famous. But like when I was in person, there is this aura of like, you know, because he just got off stage from 10,000, speaking in front of 10,000 people.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, he just has his energy. He walks in the room. He's really loving and kind and saying hello to everyone. But his whole team are like coordinating his world around him. So there's just this buzz of energy around these people. And I imagine Taylor Swift has a giant entourage of people that are constantly managing her life and helping her travel and all the rest of it. Like, how much of that aura of fame is like people kind of playing a giant role in your life all the time? You know what I mean? Like, it's
like
not
this perception when there's people working for
it's not a normal thing, man. Like, I had it when I went to Mexico and I got off the plane and I was, you know, speaking at an event, and it was, you know, they would put me on as a headline speaker, and I got off the plane and there were people like waving a printed sign with my face and my name on it, and people were walking past like, that's the guy that's on the sign. It's weird, that's right? Yeah. It was just weird. And then they're like, we've got this van for you, do you want something to drink, do you want something? They were just pampering me.
Yeah,
I felt like, I was like, oh, this is what it feels like to kind of be like a celebrity, I guess.
Yeah,
but like, not saying I am, but it was just odd. And I'm just trying to figure, like,
do when you think that's your aura changed because of it?
I definitely felt more confident.
Yeah.
I definitely felt odd. I felt it felt uncomfortable because it wasn't something I'd experienced.
Yeah.
It's like when you drive the first time, you're like,
yeah,
you're overthinking everything you're doing. Like, think about it, like, you've been driving for 2 years, you're like, yeah, whatever, like, I'm turning at an intersection, you know, put my blinker on, whatever else. Like, it just becomes unconscious. But when you're first driving, you're overanalyzing and overthinking about everything.
Yeah.
That's how it felt. I was overanalyzing these people. Who are they? Why are they trying to do nice things? Your brain's just an overwhelm.
Yeah.
But after the third day of it, it kind of started to kind of sink into the background. But I was like, if that's been your life for 14 years, like, is that what creates this aura of confidence or this sense of celebrity? I don't know.
Or do you put that on them knowing how much you know about them?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Good question.
I feel like maybe it's people put it on them.
I feel like it comes down to this world building thing, right? If you've got this world built around you where there's cameras and, you know, it's there's fans, there's cameras, there's paparazzi, there's a crew of people around you, it almost becomes easy to act as a celebrity per se. You know, that's why people are like, celebrities are arrogant. It's like, well, no, that's just the world that's built around them. That's just what they do.
Yeah, because it's almost like someone does your dry cleaning, someone cleans your house, someone drives you somewhere. Like, you don't manage your life the way a normal person would manage their life.
I'm going to coin a new term here. Let's see if this latches on.
Right.
But hear me out. I have somewhere I'm going with this.
I'm not being defensive. Go for it.
Okay.
I'm intrigued.
I'm going to call it the horror movie theory. I've spoken about
this is a bit dramatic.
So this is now you're like, where the fuck is he going?
Yeah, I like it there. It's got a punch to it. Go.
Have you ever walked through one of those walk-through horror mazes where there's actors in there that are made to scare you?
Yeah, I did the Walking Dead one and people are jumping out and grabbing me and shit.
And crazy. You know they're actors, right?
Yeah.
You know you're safe. You're not
And people are chasing you down the street with chainsaws and stuff. It was fun.
But does it scare the shit out of you? Does a small part of you go, oh shit, there's fucking something jumping out
of it's me, like, right? Your flight or flight senses are a little unnerved.
Yeah.
But you're trying to override it because you're like, no, I know it's a thing.
So I've noticed that a lot of actors get their breakthrough horror movies. And I remember having that thought after doing one of those walkthrough mazes. I was like, it would be easy to act in a horror movie because even though you know that man with the chainsaw is not actually going to kill you, like, that's terrifying. Like, if I'm running away from a man wielding a chainsaw in the bushes and being told, hey, act and scream, the second you're there and it's dark and there's smoke and you don't know where it's coming from and you're hearing the noise of a chainsaw wheeling, you're like, yeah, actually, this is pretty freaking scary. Like, and I think it's that world-building thing of, even though you know it's fake, you just immerse yourself in it because it's just surrounds you. And I think that applies to the celebrity thing too, is if this world of being a celebrity surrounds you, it's easy to just fall into, okay, this feels like what I'm doing now.
All right, well, let's unpack world-building and archetypes because they're kind of the same thing, right? So, like, if you look at Taylor Swift, Emma, like, you know, we're always working on what is an archetype for a personal brand. We're constantly building personal brands together. And for those of you listening, if you're like, what the hell are they talking about? A brand archetype is what, the 68 different?
There's 36. So there's 12 main ones and then they break down into like sub ones.
Right, okay.
And it's based off Carl Jung's theory on, he's a psychologist, and his theory on there being universal characters that can define people. So there's universal traits that you can classify people by. An example, if I say someone acted like a hero, you know instinctively what a hero is, how they act, what they value. If I say sage or magician, you instinctively again go, yeah, yeah, I know that. That's a gut feel thing. I don't have to think about that. I just understand it.
Right.
So archetypes are based on a theory that there are universal characteristics that people just understand.
Right. So it's like when you're at like a and we share this example sometimes, like when you're at a family event and there's like 50 relatives.
Yep.
You're like, okay, that's the cheeky uncle.
Yep.
That's the loving auntie. Yep. That's the rascal, caregiver. Naughty cousin. Yep. You know,
the
like
rebel.
You put these labels. Yeah, you did that so quickly, right? So if you pull it up on the screen here, this is like a simple version of it. But essentially, like, there's these different archetypical ideologies of how someone acts and operates. And the four quadrants are someone who provides order and structure to the world, someone who creates freedom, someone who leaves a mark on the world, and someone who creates a reason to interconnect, right? So if you go around the wheel, you know, let's just say a hero archetype, I just think of Will Smith in I Am Legend, kind of hero-esque archetype, right? But then if you think about the jester, you think about Ryan Reynolds in Deadpool, right? So like, what would Taylor Swift be? Like, what do you think her archetype is, and what kind of world do you think she's building with her personal brand?
I think it's changed from cycle to cycle. Talking about all of these rebrands, I think every album cycle has had a different archetype. I mean, she has an album called Lover, I would say. That was the Lover archetype, right? That was the part of her life where it was like, okay, now it's a different love. We were talking about teenage love and chasing a guy in high school.
Yeah,
and
her teenage ones, I would say, was when she was the innocent archetype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she started a song called Innocent as well.
Yeah.
Maybe this is all conscious. We're talking about this subconscious archetype. Maybe she's like sat down for a marketing meeting.
Been like,
she's
this is what I'm doing.
We're going to be the innocent.
She's just moving around the whole wheel. She's like, I'm going to get the whole world, man. I'm going to act every one of these.
Yeah.
So what with her first album, what do you think she, like, go through the stages. Like, what archetypes do you think she's moved through?
So we had, what we say, the innocent?
Innocent, I'd say, yeah, for self-titled.
Dreamer? I think when we were talking about that positive manifestation and like breaking out of a small town, I would say that sort of.
So she was innocent, now she's dreaming about her future, right?
Yeah.
Then where do we go to? Red. What would you say Red was? There was a bit of the Lover in that, I think. I can't read all of these on the screen. What are we looking
Which
at?
Which was the one where she was like being defiant and she was like...
Reputation. 2017. That was when she was like, I'm going to take control of my own reputation now.
Yeah,
like,
that was rebel hardcore.
Yeah, hardcore rebel.
Right, anti-system, I'll do it my way.
It was like, if the media is going to say this about me, I'm just going to own it. Like, if that's what you want to think about me, that's my narrative.
So she's no longer playing the innocent role.
No.
Yeah.
Which is totally different to where she started, right?
Yeah. She's very much like moved around the wheel.
But that album was huge. Like, people latched onto that.
Where would you say she is now?
The sage, maybe? Caregiver sage? I don't know. She's got this like calming presence now.
She does. It's a bit more mature.
Yeah.
Like, she's hit maturity. It's like every teenager goes through their rebel years, right?
So yeah, it's coming back to that growing with the audience, right? Like, Reputation was when people were a little bit older. They're like, I'm going to decide who I want to be. This is my story to tell.
And she's dating that guy now in the NFL. I forget his name.
Travis Kelce, I want to say. Kelce,
right.
Yeah. And it's a whole thing. Talking back to the influence that she has on the world, right? The amount of people that are buying tickets to shows to see her.
Reading about something like people were upset about the Super Bowl or not being able to get tickets to the game because it...
Right.
Like something about like people going to the game just to watch Taylor Swift in the stands versus watching the game.
Yeah, it's wild. I guess, if you told someone 10 years ago that people were buying tickets to the NFL to see Taylor Swift, you'd be like, what? Like,
That'd be so much pressure though, because I can understand like there'd be a certain level of fame where it's my second to become annoying. It's like people are criticizing her for, you know, what's happening in the NFL and like why they're buying this guy's jerseys and this guy's careers.
Conspiracy theories. If you get so famous that people start building conspiracy theories about you, you've broken the ceiling.
Like, Elvis is out there, he's still alive.
100%.
Avril Lavigne's dead.
Yeah. No, she was cloned.
Alive. She died and she was cloned.
She
died and she was cloned.
She's got a mole in a different place. Look it up. It's a thing.
If you ever get bored one night and you've got 3 hours to kill, I watched a 3-hour video on it.
3 hours?
I watched it for a joke. I was like, this is hilarious. And by the end of it, I was like, Avril Lavigne's dead.
Facts. What percentage of yourself was like, maybe she was cloned?
100%.
Really?
100% of me was like, that's it.
What about now? Has it dropped back down? Or are you still at 100?
Look, I'm amused by the prospect of thinking that.
Okay, Avril Lavigne.
It's more amusing to me to just believe that she's dead.
Man.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing.
Lavigne, conspiracy theory, rise in popularity.
Oh, it goes deep.
It's my favorite thing, though, this was the best part, right? It was like a 3-hour video.
Yeah.
And 2 hours and 59 minutes of it is this like proper legit evidence per se, where like you could you could fully buy into it. And yeah. then at the end, the mic drop is, and Avril Lavigne once stated that she hated Nickelback. And 3 years later, she married Chad Kroeger from Nickelback. The real Avril would never. And I was like, that's it. Done.
Dude, that's how you end the set, bro. That's wild, man. What about the Elvis one? Do you think Elvis got away?
I haven't heard that one.
There's a theory that he just got overwhelmed. He was done with it. And he was just like, I can make more money just being dead.
Wow.
Nah, I feel like that's I watched the movie. It was so sad.
It's so sad. Yes. Unless he produced it.
Starting a new conspiracy. Yeah.
I don't know. This if he produced it, I think he would have put himself in a better light. It was not flattering.
It was rough. The first half, I was like, I feel like I'm on an acid trip. Like, this is the weirdest movie. Yeah. And then the ending was like, oh man, this is rough. Like, I just wanted to do well.
The Priscilla movie's coming out soon too. Like, Priscilla's side of the story. I'm intrigued about that. Oh. Yeah.
Interesting. Is it going to be the same actors?
No, I don't think so. I think it's different producer, different story. But I'm intrigued. I don't think he's going to be painted in a very good light.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I'm nervous. We have like pictures of Elvis in my house. I'm like, am I going to have to take these down? They're very aesthetically pleasing in my house. I like the vibe, but I don't know.
Well, that's not going to that. That's another rabbit hole. But so I guess to end this Taylor Swift saga, like, what's the world she's building, right? If she's hit maturity and she's playing this more caring, I'm here to do good in the world character, and she's kind of built this fandom and she's hit maybe mass market, you know what I mean? What do you think is the world she's trying to build? And like, how does someone go beyond this level of career? Like, it feels like every step she takes from this point is like going to really not box her in, but it's like every step is more crucial than ever.
Can you go beyond? Can you be more famous than what Taylor Swift is now? That's what I'm saying.
Like, it's like she's hit.
I think she can't. I think she's just got to do what she wants to do at this point.
Right. She'll pivot into production, into movies, into like other music, bringing up other artists.
She'll step into another medium.
Yeah, into another role potentially even, because I think that you've
seen
that with...
Starts a K-pop band.
I don't think you can do that.
I don't know. I think it'd be sick, man. K-pop's lit. I love it.
American pop.
Yeah. I was going to say, A-pop. That makes it A-pop, right?
Yeah. Well, we were talking about like some of the tactics she uses in her marketing is... What would you say? Inspired by J-pop and K-pop? Like, she's like her albums, you can collect different editions of her albums. And I was looking at, I can't remember what it was. M, who's on our team here, she's a designer. She's way into K-pop. And she was explaining to me that one of the boy bands that she follows,
Astro, probably.
I don't know. They drop albums.
Loves Astro.
And there's like 25 guys in the band. And like every time you buy an album, you get 3 cards. And everyone's buying like 80, 90 versions of the album.
Just
to collect all the cards.
It's Pokemon. Got to catch them all.
Smart marketing. One fan, 90 album sales, right? Yeah. So like
Taylor Swift does it too. She's re-releasing all of her old albums at the moment. And each time she drops a new one, it's like one day only you can get this colored vinyl. Mm. So people don't have that time to go away and think about it and make a financial decision. They just go instinctively, I must have that.
So what's that band you just had up?
Oh, it's every band. Okay. Every single K-pop band has their own merch line, but it doesn't go to just t-shirts and like CDs.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of the time it's books, cards.
They have the light stick. What do people buy them at the show to like have them like, you know, where people pull up like their lighter or their phone light? At K-pop shows, they all have like the light stick.
And each band has its different one.
I've got one of these for the Wiggles for my kids.
You like press a button and tap into it.
Oh, yeah. Like I think the hammer is black pink or something.
It's black and pink. That would make sense.
Yeah. Wait, so every tour?
Branded. No, every artist has their own specific shaped one.
Yeah.
So, and they cost like 50, 60 bucks.
Yeah,
people go in and the entire crowd will have them.
Wow, this is giving me Sailor Moon vibes and I want to jump in on it.
This is the proof of like how branding is culturally relevant. Mm-hmm. So the way you would market yourself in Japan or in Korea or in the US
totally different.
Seems like a totally different system.
We had a call with a client yesterday who has a lot of their marketing is based in Western countries and then a lot of it's based in China, and it's just totally different approaches both sides.
In what way?
Visually, as far as they're like the fonts don't have to match, the colors, people respond to colors differently, you know, the hierarchy is different. They want to know X over this.
Right. But I guess back to the Swift conversation, just to keep the steering the ship in that world building side of things. Like when you look at Taylor Swift and like what's happening in Asia, we were talking about like the difference of the marketing in the US and like what's happening with K-pop and J-pop.
The thing I found interesting, a lot of them, and I don't know if this is still the case, a lot of them shuffle through members. So we were talking about Baby Metal earlier in the week. And they came up through, it was actually branded as the school. When I say school here, it wasn't a school for K-pop. It was like a group put together that was called The School, where as part of that larger group, they had different branded sections. So it was
like 50 people.
And stuff. And right. Yeah, and it was like one big K-pop group that had their own individual, J-pop, I believe, and they had their own individual sectors in that. But what I found really interesting is
like the jocks, the nerds, like the different.
Yeah.
And Baby Metal was like the.
Baby Metal was like the metal kids in the school. And then people loved that.
This is a television show?
It was a television show that made music. So most of the time, it's an idol rather than like, this is a musician.
Yeah.
This is an actor. It's an idol, which is a celebrity that does music and acting and TV appearances. Interviews,
right.
Has like a talk show. They can do anything.
Okay. But they would build a brand around these individual groups, and there was like an age limit of once you reach a certain age, you no longer fit the brand, and they would cycle out members. So I think it was only the recent lineup of Baby Metal that blew up, where they went, okay, we're going to now ignore the age limit thing because these girls are so popular and they've built it to what it is.
Yeah.
But before then, they were cycling through members because I think it might have been 21. I think they turned 21 and they're like, you're too old to do this now.
Jeez, let's swap it out.
Specifically with Baby Metal, one of the members left. They were quite big already, but one of the members left. And rather than replacing her specifically, they went, we're going to have five girls that we just swap in and out when we...
Right. Wow.
You'd be pissed if you didn't make it. You'd be like that Spice Girl that never made the cut. Okay, so like, it's interesting when, if you look at the rise of K-pop, it's starting to influence other markets. It's spreading its wings outside of the Asia-Pacific market into the US, into Europe, into Australia. And it's, how much of the music space do you see being influenced by how they market overseas to, people are on TikTok now, people are trying to... the band thing seems to be coming back to music where it became about the solo artist. Now it's about groups again. Yeah.
I think there was a long period where, back in the day, YouTube was huge. It was always about music videos and what they were wearing. And then there was this long period where it was like, Spotify's the thing. We don't have to see people singing. Like how many artists had people listened to on Spotify and they could walk past that artist in the street and have no idea that they listened to them sing every day, right? I think K-pop and J-pop has brought back that world building where it's like Cabe was saying, it's the whole idol factor. It's not just, this person's not just a singer.
Yeah.
They're an idol. You're grown to, you love their personality. You love their dance moves. You love what they wear. You love how they style the music videos. You love the whole world that they fit within. And I think we're seeing more and more of that coming through now.
Okay.
You touched on The Weeknd earlier and you look at all of The Weeknd's new graphics where it's like, it's this world building. We're telling a story through music videos from the
album. Has he got a new brand?
Yeah.
Can we pull it
definitely.
Up? I just remember the crazy hair. Correct me here, Luke, because I know you know a lot more. I love his music and he had the crazy hair where he was on the stage and he was kind of like a nobody in the video. Then I just remember seeing stuff where he was like doing stuff like a bit more futuristic with Daft Punk.
Yeah.
Then he was kind of the bad boy in a jacket. Then there was this character.
This was iconic. I loved this.
And this was really cool.
The music video where he gets like beat up in Vegas and he runs through and it's like this trippy. Yeah.
Dude, it's very immersive. This? Because I remember it just visually was so striking.
This is nostalgia coming back to that cycle of people like things that are old. This was... I would argue that this was the first song in many, many, many years that was reminiscent of 80s pop that made it huge on the radio.
But I guess it was also at a time where that like vaporwave synth was really, really prevalent.
But he brought it back, I think. He brought it to mainstream. I was in a synth pop band, still am, that was wearing red suits and doing this. And then he came and did this. And
go on, man, give it a plug. Plug it in.
Yeah. Well, no, he jacked our brand. That's what I'm saying. This is my whole avenue here. I'm just pivoting it to say that The Weeknd stole our brand.
Yeah.
No, but what I'm saying is there was this subculture and this scene that existed around 80s synthwave and stuff,
right.
But he's brought it back to the mainstream and it was that nostalgia thing. All of a sudden, an artist that had mainstream recognition that people knew of did that and people were like, yeah, I feel something. Like, this is making me feel the way I felt as a kid. And this is, yeah, I feel like I'm going back in time. And it was that world building thing that for so long people didn't care about because they were just listening to music and not watching the visuals.
Right.
And I think, yeah, the K-pop and the J-pop scenes have made that much more predominant within the industry.
Yeah. For, like, even if you look at like famous brands like Supreme with James Jebiah, he was inspired by how Japan did limited edition exclusive drops of different items. And then I remember I saw this recently where like big retailers were going to Supreme because they were blowing up. I don't know if you want to pull up some of the stats when they opened their first store, but people were lining up down the street. They were on television. Like they created this FOMO of like, if I don't go and line up the day before, I'm going to miss out, right? And everyone wanted to get, yeah, look at this lineup. This
people is crazy. Sell their spots in line as well.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting. People that's would queue crazy. Up overnight and then the next morning people would come, they'll be like, you can have my spot for $1,000. And people would be like, yeah, okay.
It's like the Marc Ribier video.
Cash only. I saw that. Yeah, where he was like the first third iPhone. He was third in line for the first iPhone. Yeah. And what happened?
He was third hilarious. In line for the first iPhone and a lady came up with like stacks of cash and she's like, can I buy your spot? Because she wanted to buy hundreds to resell. And he's like, yeah, sure. And his friend was with him just waiting.
Yeah.
Just being a friend, just hanging out.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, sure. Like took $1,000, I think, from her for the spot. The lady got to the front of the line and they're like one max per customer. Oh. And his friend that was with him wasn't buying an iPhone.
So he got one for him anyway. So
he just stood behind that's good, and man. Just like, cool.
Yeah.
And he won at life that day. That lady just bought him an iPhone.
Yeah. 100%. So I think this is what's interesting about marketing, right? Is if you can figure out a way to build additional line extensions around your main product. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, Taylor Swift is like, here's my album. Yep. But you can get this exclusive color limited edition if for today only.
Yep.
And like, I see this happening a lot with musicians, with merch and tickets and all the rest of it. There's this exclusivity FOMO component that drives additional revenue, whether it was Elvis selling Christmas sweaters or like all the other crap he was selling in the movie, making snow. It's a movie reference. but like, you know, how much of like what happened with Supreme is like world building for Taylor Swift and these personal brands, right? Because when I look at Supreme, I see this alternative world, this alternative way of using fashion. It's not just a standard retail shop where I can always buy it. It's limited. Mm. And like to the point where people were offering James Jebiah $20 million to retail his product in their stores. And he's just like, nah.
Yep.
He's like, this is how I do it.
Mm.
Yeah.
I remember we spoke about it internally a while ago with some of the projects we were working on where it comes back to that status thing. There's certain reasons that people will spend money on a product and spend money on a brand. And you posted it on your Instagram story. Was it yesterday? I think the Prada paperclip earring.
Right.
Where it's literally
$400. Pull it up, man. That's crazy. Mm-hmm.
It's a paperclip with the Prada logo on it.
Perceived value.
Yeah.
Mm. And I saw another one too.
It comes down to that status thing, right? People see it and they're like, oh, he's got that. Like they're wearing the Prada earring. Mm. And I think it's a similar thing where people, when it's got that exclusivity to it, it's that status of I'm a true Taylor Swift fan because I own every color of her record. Mm. So it's instantly you're going to purchase something because you're driven by that need for the status and that need to be part of the 1%.
Yeah, look at this. Prada selling an engraved paperclip for $400. Is this real? Like, can I buy this?
Yeah.
Because I shared it and I was like, this is crazy, dude.
Yeah, you can buy that.
People are buying these just to go, yeah, I bought one.
Would you buy it?
I kind of was tempted. Here's why. I was going to be like,
wait, is it for pierced ears? Does that mean
I don't know. We're going to invite a new look? It like, actually might just be a paperclip.
If it's just a $400
paperclip. It's chunky. That would be like tough to fit in your ear.
You know what? I did that. I had a very short-lived phase where I bought one of those giant, chunky Louis Vuitton like padlock necklaces. Yeah. It was the padlocks that you got on the bags and people started making necklaces out of them.
Yeah.
And I bought one and I was like, sick. This is, again, it's a status thing. I was like, I'm wearing one of the Louis Vuitton things. That thing was so heavy and uncomfortable. I think I wore it once and I was like, ow, my neck hurts. Like, I'm not going to wear this anymore.
You bend over and they smash your teeth. And you're never again. Like,
not happening.
Yeah.
Don't love it.
So like how much of this is like them genuinely trying to hit headlines? Because if I was Prada right now, I'm like, hey, how do we get in the press for something ridiculous?
Yeah.
Paperclip jewelry is a thing. It's a current sub-trend on Insta.
Oh, so they're tapping into something else.
Capsule jewelry, jewelry that looks like pills and tablets is like taken off. So
it's definitely a trend.
Wait, educate me. I've not even heard of this. What are you talking about? What trend?
Yeah, it's just a trend, like, because jewelry, like everything else, goes through cycles and trends. The current thing is chunky and like lifestyle objects turned into jewelry. So paper clips and
safety pins.
Safety pins and like tablets, like capsules is a big thing. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So they're magnifying a trend.
The other one I saw.
How many people do you think will regret buying the paperclip?
100% of them.
No one in 10 years is going to be like, my best purchase ever. I have a paperclip.
I reckon if you're buying the clip, you have no regrets already.
You've got too much money to have regrets.
You don't deserve money. I was going to buy it because I was like going to make a piece of content out of it. I'm like this, but you know. Anyway, this is crazy.
Tax deductible.
Can we Photoshop the logo onto a normal paper? Paperclip instead and save you the $400 US.
What we should do is we should do our own paperclip and just see if we can sell one. And like as a $500 paperclip, you know. No, look this up. This is even crazier. So I don't know if this was a response to the paperclip thing, but type in Louis Vuitton sandwich bag. You seen this? This is
ringing a bell.
This is dumb.
I'm intrigued.
This is stupid.
I love me a good sandwich bag, so I am also intrigued.
I was like, oh, my butt.
I love me a good sandwich bag.
I would love that.
Look at this. Okay.
Designer sandwich bags is also a thing.
Oh, this look is sick. Yeah, no, I have seen this. Sick. Yeah.
Luke's like, that's fire.
I'll have it. That's mad. That's so sick.
Due to a high demand, your product will be shipped in 2 weeks.
Whoa.
That's so sick.
So they've had.
I still love that jacket.
Wait, how much is it retailing for?
$5,200.
Wait, what? Wow. Is that a joke?
No, no, it's leather, right? This is a leather lunch bag made by Louis Vuitton.
It's quite big.
Yeah.
It's got no handle.
Look at the model.
That's the only thing that would have. Yeah. If this had a handle, $5,000, I'm there.
I want it to be. I would pay to be in the room when they have these conversations.
Yeah. They're like, what?
Like, how do they choose the model, the outfit he's going to wear? Like, they're like, yeah, you know what it is? It's the next thing. It's a fucking lunch bag, and we're going to make it orange, and we're going to sell the shit out of it, and we're going to show
it. Well, they own that orange, right? You see people walking down the street with that, and you know it's Louis Vuitton.
Mm.
I think, you know what this is? People are buying that to flex and to make fun of things, and content creators, like, it's almost like, would you say the trend right now is that it's a little bit ridiculous?
Mm.
Oh, yeah, this futuristic, chunky, impractical fantasy element is coming through strongly.
Right.
So we're moving from nostalgia into futuristic, where people are going, have you guys seen the Astro Boots?
I was going to say that. They're the red ones, right?
Yeah.
The red
tried to get them in Korea.
Yeah.
Okay, is it futuristic or is it ridiculous or is it things that are unnecessary, but I'm going to rep it and make it cool?
I think there's a part of the comedy of buying something so ridiculously stupid, at least with a lot of the influencers I watch. Like I know a streamer that just bought, I think it was like a $50,000 ape statue made out of bronze because it had massive testicles. And that was the only reason he bought it.
Wow.
And it's like,
it's kitsch.
It's probably like
kitsch is coming back. I learned this word recently and I fucking love this word.
Let me Google that real quick. What does that mean?
Yeah, get a proper definition up. It's essentially like,
it's like so cheesy and cringe, it's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, like, it's like a combination.
It's like wearing a Christmas sweater for fashion, right? Where you're like, this is so ugly that it's good. Yeah. I know that I'm wearing this ironically and I love it.
So kitsch is in. So something of tawdry.
Worthless, trashy art. That's one way to put it.
Well, it's a different definition. Let's compare definitions. This definition is something that is something of tawdry design, appearance, or content created to appeal to popular or undiscriminating taste.
So this is saying it comes from a German word, which means worthless, trashy art.
I like this definition more, man.
Yeah, kitsch. So like you get something, you know it's weird and stupid. I have a tattoo of Ryan Gosling playing the guitar. Kitsch.
Right, okay.
It's so dumb that it's good.
It's a head scratcher and people are like, that's cool, man.
Yeah, exactly. Right, okay. And it's a conversation starter. People are like, is that Ryan Gosling playing the guitar? I'm like, sure is. Right. Well, they're like, why? I'm like, why not?
Is that shirt kitsch? What are you wearing right now?
Ooh. It's vintage. Yeah, right. This was a 90s horror movie.
I'm just excited for Luke's kitsch phase whenever that starts. Okay, so, all right, so let's bring it home with Tay-Tay. Like, if she's world building, what world is she building? And, like, what can people take away from this? Like, if I'm building a brand, I'm a creator, I'm trying to get known, like, how do I apply this to myself and my personal brand?
For me, it would be don't be afraid to pivot. it would be this concept that if she built this world in 2006 with her first album and it was incredible and it did so well, if she stuck within that world, she would not be where she is now. Mm. There were so many points in her career where she had to pivot that. She had to rebrand. She had to grow with people. And that's what's made her so successful. So I would say the takeaway is if you run a business or a personal brand, if you've ever had something that you're consciously branding and you find yourself attached to the way the branding looks and it feels like deep down, you're like, something's pushing me to change this, but am I going to lose trust by doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to take the leap. Often it's a take one step back to take 10 steps forward sort of thing.
Yeah. No, well said.
Yeah. And I would say be authentic and back yourself. So be intentional in the world you're building.
Right.
Go along with that vision, like explore it and deploy it, like back yourself.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. I heard something, I don't know where I heard this recently, but it really stuck in my mind and it was for stand-up comedians. And every time a comedian goes up on stage, the term in the industry is like every time you go on in front of a new audience, you take another brick out of the wall.
Right.
And I think if I look at my personal brand and how it's shifted from teaching Instagram to learning about branding to teaching branding, I would even debate that I'm kind of going through a bit of an evolution at this point in time where I'm an author of a book, mm-hmm. I'm speaking at live events, I'm doing boot camps and workshops. I'm branching out of content and becoming a bit more of a face-to-face personalized brand. I would say that for me, every time I produce a piece of content or do the next project, I'm taking another brick out of the wall and becoming more me.
Yep.
The weird thing is, I think as a personal brand, it's difficult to start 100% you. As much as you're like, I'm going to try and be authentic, I think there's always have you even figured who you are out yet, right? Mm-hmm. If you're 21, have you figured yourself out? Mm-hmm. You're kind of a new adult yet to experience the world. What I'm trying to say here is I think as a personal brand, you just have to kind of get out there and just do something and figure out who you are through the creative process.
Mm.
And I think so many times that people reach out to me and talk to me like, where do I start? It's like, just start.
Mm.
And you'll figure it out as you go and you'll find things you do like, you don't like. You'll test and experiment things that resonate with you and don't. And you'll start to figure out once enough bricks are out of the wall, you're like, oh, this is what I'm about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's taken me 4 years to figure that out. Now I'm like, okay, I really just want to connect with people and help them and educate them and help them get their stride in whatever their passion is.
And who you are is constantly evolving. If you find that thing early, you go, this is who I am right now. That doesn't mean this is who I am and this is who I have to be for the rest of my life. So this is my brand.
Right.
If you stay there forever, it gets to the point where what was authentic then is no longer authentic. You're losing that authenticity.
Right. Are you acting the old self?
Yeah, exactly. You go, I chose that this is where I want to be and that's where I'm going to stay forever. And then at some point you're forcing yourself to stay there as opposed to growing naturally.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, natural progression of your identities, it's human. For me, it's like nothing really ever stays the same.
Mm.
Like your children are going to grow up. They're going to get older. Your role as a father, as a partner is going to shift. Your role in, a company or team members or running a business, it's all going to change. And I think, to try to stay the same and try to own a concept in the market is difficult. Like I'd challenge you guys to name one personal brand that never changed.
That worked.
That works.
Yeah, it's they fail if they don't change.
There's probably a few cases, but even the biggest artists.
About the Queen? That's true. Do we reckon she's changed?
Yeah, but how interesting is the Queen?
The Wiggles have changed.
They pivoted.
They're
doing 18 plus shows and stuff as well. What? Original Wiggles do 18 plus shows.
Yeah. And get Cam on here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Look up the tree.
Swap for 5 minutes because this is interesting. This is some crazy shit.
They're like, put the Wiggles fan on the mic.
No, I'm putting. Yeah, dude. I'm a Wiggles fan. I've been to their children's concerts, but Cam, you went to the adult concert.
They did a show. Well, actually, they did it like a Virgin for Virgin. Sorry. Tame Impala Elephant. And it was amazing.
It was number one.
So Like a Version is a YouTube channel for a radio station here in Australia where people do a cover of a famous song. So the Wiggles are, just to fill people in here, they're a children's band. It's been around since the freaking 80s, man?
Yeah. There's a rebrand for you. They used to be the Cockroaches and they were an adults band. Correct. And then they rebranded rock to the band. Wiggles.
I'm so glad.
Wait, what? I didn't know that.
Rock band. Yeah, they were an OG rock band. And then they pivoted into and basically created the music for like children.
Yeah.
That whole industry.
How did that happen? How do you go from rock to like, you know what, we're going to make kids songs.
Well,
it's the next episode of the pod, just the Wiggles.
Yeah. Let's do a Wiggles episode, man. Yeah, go ahead.
But so yeah, they do this like weekly or fortnightly like cover each for this radio station, and then they invited the Wiggles on. I don't know how that came about. And then they don't announce.
They're an ABC artist.
They don't announce what the song's going to be. They just go, we're about to play a song. And then they say, we're about to play a song by Tame Impala, which is an Australian psychedelic rock band called Elephant.
And these guys make music for like three-year-olds.
They all dress up. It's amazing.
It's iconic.
Yeah, pull it up.
So this one.
To be a kids artist doesn't mean you're not like you're lesser than. It's equally as difficult. And yeah, I think people forget that like, with the like maturity.
Cabe and I were talking
about
this before. Same in comedy artists. People go, oh, it's just made to be funny. It's not good. It's like, no, but if you release a comedy song that's not catchy, no one cares.
It doesn't work. It's the same with writing kids' books. People assume that because they're simpler, they're easier, but they're actually harder in a lot of ways than adult books.
I can sing you the Wiggles discography. Like that's how catchy those songs were back in the day. Like you have to be a good songwriter.
Yeah, it's weird because they're a brand where like I grew up with it as a kid, and now I'm a dad, and I liked the Wiggles when I was a kid. I'm like, man, my kids are gonna love this. Yeah. So now it's like doubling down. It's like the parents are fans or were fans. Now they're making sure that their kids are fans as well. Like when I was a kid, I love this. You'll love this too. It's a bonding thing.
I'm gonna make sure my kid likes Harry Potter.
Let's go.
For sure.
Let's go.
Yeah.
100%. My kids aren't old enough yet, but like 100%.
So anyway, they were playing this song at Acer Arena. The whole mosh pit was like fully just jumping. Like I went to this gig and
so
it was
like,
Acer Arena.
Fill in the backstory, right? So they did an adults
only show.
Only show.
So they did one
18 plus, you could drink.
They did one in like the northern beaches in Sydney, and it sold out within less than 5 minutes. So it was like a very small, like let's just say 1,200 people
venue,
sold out within 5 minutes. Almost impossible to buy tickets.
Yeah.
And then they cottoned on that basically this is what we're talking about is that there's a contingency of their fans now who now have disposable income. So.
And nostalgia. Pair that with the
need
for nostalgia.
Yeah, they're like, fuck
right?
I'd want to see the Wheels Salad, all those songs. And they now did an arena tour of Australia and sold out everywhere. We're talking like, what's Acer Arena capacity?
15,000 when it's in the round, I think. So maybe 10,000 with the setup they had.
They had 10,000 18 plus people going. And we're talking like children growing up who are now like 21 or whatever. And they were taking their parents as like the nostalgia appeal. Of like you're
it's like
you're
that
now
full
21.
Circle moment, right?
Yeah. And then the best
Wait, people are taking like their 50-year-old dad and stuff?
Yeah.
My mum would love that. She'd be on the wines like,
longer and hot potato.
Yeah. And then I want High Five to do it. That's what I want next.
Given, you know, it's Australia when you go to the bathroom and there's people like plastered drunk in the bathroom. I won't say what was happening, but
at a Wiggles show,
was the vibe of it. But yeah, this is just a brand that has pivoted and embraced the like 18s plus now. They even played on Splendor in the Grass, which is arguably the biggest festival in Australia.
Yeah,
this is kind of like the Lego thing. It's like, you know, it comes full circle, right? Like now that people have disposable income, they're spending $1,200 on a Millennium Falcon, like we're talking about on the last pod. But that's crazy, man. I remember when you told me that, I was like, that's interesting how they can exist in two hemispheres at the same time, right? Because how hard is it for a brand to exist for children, for three-year-olds, but then simultaneously exist for 18 plus?
Well, Murray, I think Murray's the red one. I'm not sure. But he does like proper rock bands now. Like he's no longer really affiliated with the Wiggles too much. They brought him back just for the 18 plus shows. But
yeah, it's almost like two separate bands now. You've got the new Wiggles and then you've got the old Wiggles that do the 18 plus shows.
Yeah. Shout out to the Wiggles if you're listening.
Get the Wiggles on the pod.
Let's try to do that, man.
Let's do it.
Because Jeff, the old purple Wiggle.
Yeah.
Jared has this funny story because he like knows someone that knows Jeff and he lives in the northern beaches in Sydney.
Yeah, he's a northern beaches guy.
And this is Jeff here on the screen, right? So there's a song called Wake Up Jeff and people
say, Wake Up Jeff. Yeah. And then I'm like, hold it back.
Resist. The urge. It's all like programming from when you're a child. Yeah. But like what happens is people know where he lives and they go to his house at like 3 a.m. and they beep and they scream and they're like, Wake Up Jeff.
I would have a fake address listed.
That would haunt him forever. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. But apparently loves it. He thinks it's funny.
You love that once.
Yeah.
The second time you're like, nah.
Yeah.
You slip earplugs in for sure.
Yeah. He's like, it happens regularly.
Of course it
People
does.
Are drunk, it's late in the morning, and
do you think it's the same locals every time? It's literally like the guy three doors down.
They're, like, let's go,
they're in their group chat, they're like, should we wake him up? Let's do it.
Yeah, every Friday. Let's
do it again. I would love to get the Wiggles on the podcast.
Let's do it, man. I met the Blue Wiggle. What's his name, Anthony?
My brother did landscaping for the Blue Wiggle.
Yeah?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, apparently.
If you live out towards Galveston.
Right. Well, apparently their production company's up the street. So I was having breakfast the other day with my daughter. We go on like a daddy-daughter date on Saturdays.
Yeah.
And the guy who like manages the cafe is like, notice that my little girl, she's three. She's wearing Emma Wiggle's outfit. And he goes, did you know Emma comes here frequently? Oh. So apparently he goes. So I'm just going to camp this place out.
Yeah.
See if I can find them. Like, hey, you want to come on my podcast?
Well, they're an ABC artist. I think that's why they did Triple J, because Triple J is owned by the ABC. I remember we did a school excursion to see like the Wiggles behind the scenes back in the day.
Yeah.
It was like we got to walk along the set and stuff. It was very cool.
Let's do it, man. Let's email the ABC, see if we can get them on here. And on that note, guys.
Or just get people to petition. Tag them in the comments. Tag the Wiggles.
Yeah. I have the text line saved as my top number and I text it all the time. So
hang on, for what? For the Wiggles?
For the 702 radio show that I listen to religiously every morning.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is great.
I didn't listen to radio.
We're talking about nostalgia. Well, my mum used to play it every morning. So when I left home, I was like, it's weird and silent in the morning. And so I started playing my mum's radio show.
That's so wholesome.
And now I love it.
What do you text in? Like, are you entering competitions? Is it like sharing stories?
Well, we'll talk about like sometimes I'll be like, that train is down on this line, and they'll announce it to people, or you do opinion pieces and they do votes. Yeah. And
have you ever been on like, have they
called
you?
Well, they call you back and then I haven't picked up. I'm like, I don't want to talk to them.
But you're just like feeling included.
Yeah. When they read the text out and I'm like, that was me.
Oh, so you have been like announced and featured.
Yeah. Because they're talking, and I'm like, said that.
I did that once. I texted in a radio station to ask them to play our song.
Yeah.
And then they didn't realize that I was the artist whose song I was requesting. And they called to be like, you've requested Cherry Chapstick by Forever Ends Here. Tell us why you want to hear that song.
Yeah.
Because I wrote it and I get 0.002 cents if you play it. Like, can you do that?
Yeah, they're like, sure.
You're like, okay, this guy's just plugging himself.
Yeah.
I love the 0.002. It's so specific and it's like, all right, fine.
Yeah. We'll give you that.
Yeah.
We can afford that one.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, man. And that like, let's
meanwhile, we should put that as a backing track to something.
Yeah, give me some royalties. Let's do it, man. Yeah. Let's get some royalties out there,
Let's get some 0.002 cents going on.
Thank you.
Yeah, and because we're talking about music today, plug yourself, man. Selfishly, go. Well,
all right. I'm in two bands. One is called Everchange. If you're into 80s synth wave, that's the vibe. It's very nostalgic. We wear red. We film everything on film. And the other one is called Forever Ends Here, which is a pop punk band, probably most similar to Blink-182, Fall Out Boy sort of vibes. And we just got together for a reunion and came off our reunion tour, which was very, very exciting. And we're working on a new record at the moment.
Woohoo!
And what's the new record called?
Can't tell you that. Ooh. Exclusive information there.
All right. We'll drop it on the pod when it's hot.
Yeah, when it's
hot. And we'll put some links in the chat. So if anyone wants to check out your music and your band and what you're doing, man.
Go for
They're
it.
They're both really good.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm going to the next show.
And while we're on the note of plugging yourself, I believe someone on this couch has a new book coming out. Am I correct?
All right. So we kind of had the pre-sale up maybe a month ago, but we didn't really announce it. But the 90-day brand plan is available pretty much in most retailers, so wherever you're listening to in the world, whether it's Amazon, maybe Amazon's the best place to get it, but Barnes & Noble, Target, Kmart, Dimmicks, Booktopia, Walmart, wherever you want to get it. It's available for pre-orders and I do believe it comes out on the 8th of May. But yeah, the book essentially is about how to build your personal brand and blow yourself up in 90 days.
And it feels real. Look at that hardcover.
Good. So at the moment we don't actually have the book, but we've just put it on as a hardcover. So I'm excited. It's going to have a bunch of illustrations in it. It's got a couple of stories about what I've gone through and... Yeah, we're just trying to make it as action-packed as possible. We've taken the 4 years of content I've created and just kind of compiled it into a super actionable book.
We've already tested this on a few people, haven't we? We've had a few clients blow up in 90 days using your plan, which is
This isn't incredible. Theory. Like, we've done this thing with multiple brands. So we've worked with Simon Beard from Culture Kings. He's brought his personal brand up. Adam Hudson has applied a lot of this and his brand's gone great. Paul Ayash.
Ollie from Hustle Dojo.
Yeah, we didn't want to write this book until we tested it like thoroughly with people. And I think, you know, people at like take heed, because you can give advice to people and they might not do it. But the people that actually applied these methods have all had success, all grown their brands. And that's when I felt confident enough to distill it into a book and go, all right, I can make this accessible to the world.
Yeah. There's some gold in there.
Yeah, so grab a copy. It's on pre-sale. And if you're one of those people that's like, I want the audio, we're working on it. We'll get it out there soon. So, yeah.